Welcome to Buddy Read Podcast. I'm Kim.
And I'm Nia.
And we're best friends and book lovers who started buddy reading.
Or is it listening?
You know what? It's whichever.
You're absolutely right. Here we discuss all of our thoughts on our latest reads. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Kim's usually the one with the ugly.
Yes, I am.
We know. Mm-hmm. So get comfy because Buddy Read starts now.
Before jumping into today's episode, we want to let you know that we are discussing very hard topics and themes through the story Someday Maybe by Onyinye Nwabunele. The story discusses grief, suicide, loss of a spouse, racism, microaggressions, and so much more. If you're in your own personal grief journey, in whatever capacity, know that you're not alone. However, this episode can potentially be triggering for many reasons. If any of these reasons trigger you in any way, please do not continue on. And we thank you so much for continuously supporting our show.
Welcome to episode 40.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, y'all.
We are super excited, as always.
Always.
To do our show.
But extra excited today.
Right, because we have a new guest on the show.
Hello, Toya.
Hey, Toya. This is a new Toya.
A new Toya for you guys.
Welcome to our show, LaToya.
Hello, 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 ladies.
We are
so exciting to be here with you.
We are so happy to have you.
I'm so honored to have you.
Yeah.
I think I've been overthinking this and psyching myself up about, you know, just the book, being in your company, being with you on this lovely afternoon. And it's just, I'm honored. I'm 100% honored, you know, that you've invited me over.
Of course.
It's going to be a good chat. It's going to be a good chat.
It shall.
It's going to be a great chat. I mean, honestly, I've unwillingly stuck you to my side. As soon as, like, I followed you, I was like, oh, she don't know. I'm going to be her friend. She don't know.
Listen, and you stayed there, and I appreciated it because you showed me the ins and outs of this thing, girl, because I didn't know that book it was community. A whole different world.
Whole world.
And you were.
Whole world. So
inviting and helpful and pleasant you know, to just be here with you today. I think this is like full circle moment from that very first
definitely
until, like, here
Oh, I love that. Thanks. I love that.
It was really because your name was Jamaican Girl Reads. I say yes, because it's hard. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. As a first gen, it's so hard for me. Like, I don't even have the flag in my bio. And it's not because I don't love being Jamaican, because I love it down. It's just, I always feel weird because I'm first gen. And you know with your family, and your family like, you're Yankee, you know, you're not from there. Don't. And I'm always just like, fine. But, like, you made me this way, so.
I keep my flags. My bio. I wish somebody would say something.
I wish you would tell me I'm not Jamaican because I'm not in the country. I wish you
right.
would.
Right. So I tend to, I was like, look, anytime I see my people, we have to link up. Everybody have to link up. But yes, we're so happy to have you. So I think I kind of answered the question that I'm about to ask you, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Who are you in the book community?
Who am I in the book community? I think I became something that I didn't expect to in the book community, not even knowing
that
I said that there was a book community
to begin with.
But it's, you know, it all started just from, like, reading this one book and wanting to, I think the book was How to Love a Jamaican. And I finished reading the book and I'm like, I have to write about this somewhere else where my friends who don't read aren't, like,
involved.
Sideways, like, you and this thing again. I'm like, I have to find another space for this. And so I created Jamaican Girl Reads, and, like, it developed into being this bookstagrammer, and I'm using air quotes here because who knew bookstagramming or being a bookstagrammer
is a thing. But it is.
I am now in the
welcome
in the community. And I just the other day just reflecting on this, and it's like, I think this is what I do here. I want to read for fun. I want to connect with other people who read for fun, and we can have these conversations and, you know, pick each other's brains about these themes and these characters and these stories that mean so much to us. And, you know, here we are. So I guess
here we are.
I think I should officially add that to my bio, like Bookstagrammer.
Yes, you should. You definitely are. Should.
Yes, because we as in this book community. Okay.
Okay. I'm in there, you know, adjacent.
You are in there. You're a book podcaster. So
very true, I guess.
You are in there, please.
Okay. Yes. Okay, so Latoya, where are you located?
I am in Queens, New York City. Boom.
Yes. New York awesome. New York in the house.
The three best boroughs, the Bronx, Brooklyn, and Queens. What's up?
My God, say no more. Like,
I know, right?
Don't need the others.
No. Love y'all, but we don't need y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so what are your go-to genres?
My heart is with romance. Like, my heart is with the good... steamy, give me a good second chance romance, a good enemies to lovers romance. Like, that's where that's what brought me back into reading during the pandemic, really. A good YA when I'm in a slump and I need to, like, you know, get those juices flowing again. I like a good YA book. And mostly for my students too. Like, they always put me on the good young adult books that are, you know, trending
out, or
really good stories that they can relate to. So those are my two go-to genres, a good romance and a good YA. I'm all for the women's fiction and the contemporary fiction stories. But romance is where my heart lies, man. There's just something about a good romance book that just does it to you.
Literally. If you couldn't tell, we both love romance as well.
Yeah, from our book choices, we love a romance.
I will be honest, Second Chance is coming up as like a new, because I was never really a Second Chance. I was really a stand for the enemies to lovers. I don't know.
Love enemies to lovers.
Yeah, so Second Chance, as Kennedy Ryan is a massive reason as to why I'm like, Second Chance.
My heart right there just jumped. I said Kennedy Ryan.
Listen. We had such a weird, rocky start with Kennedy Ryan.
Sure did.
And so that, I always tell that story where I'm like, I am a lover of hers, but I read Longshot and I was like, what the hell did you just try to put me through?
Yeah.
And so we originally were going to do it on the show and we were just like, no, we had no idea what was going on.
Because how do you even talk about that on the show?
Yeah, really, honestly.
It was too much.
Series was very triggering. And I think that's the thing with the romance books too, where it's the romance and then there's so much more.
So much life.
Literally.
So much life. She hits life like, and she does it in a way that it's beautiful, but it's also like gut-wrenching.
Yeah. She brings out a lot of emotions.
Yeah.
Like, you have no choice but to feel for that main character.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so realistic. Like, I think sometimes you either know or have heard of someone who she's written about in her books. And I think that's what I like. It's not so far-fetched that it's like, okay, you know.
Right, yeah.
They're really, it makes sense. It's real. Yeah. It's beautiful. It's passionate. So my heart jumped when you mentioned Kennedy Ryan because I rarely reread books. But if I need to with my romance books, that's my go-to.
And I know Grip Trilogy is like, don't talk to...
We need a podcast. We need an episode for Grip.
Where we... Yes. It's on our list. It's on our, like, long list of books.
Right.
We need it because I have so much to say about that entire story. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so staying on the... A hard topic to a certain degree. What are some of your top favorite books of the year so far?
Okay, so I've had three books that I gave 5-star ratings so far.
Okay.
Here Comes the Sun. That's by Nicole Dennis Bennett, a Reed Caribbean book that's highly recommended. It's very hard to read. Trauma heavy, but so, so powerful with the writing, the characters. Like, it was, that book was very touching to me.
Yeah.
On a personal level, too. So, Here Comes the Sun is definitely a fave for me. since this year. Love Times Infinity is a YA that has my heart. It's just beautiful all around with the young people who are just cute and give you all those butterfly feelings. I loved that book, Love Times Infinity. And Mommy, just finished reading it.
Right.
And it was perfect.
I've heard good things.
Yes, yeah, and they were all true. Like Bookstagram didn't get it wrong this time with the you know the hyped up books that we try to stay away
from. And you know what happens?
Yes, but y'all will enjoy that one. I just finished reading it, and it's that will be a discussion.
Oh my goodness! Okay. Yeah.
I'm anticipating it.
Right.
I'm anticipating it. Okay. So it like, I mean, you know, great to get to know you for the show, but also get to know you as an individual. But now we're going to talk about or discuss today's book, which is Someday Maybe by Onyi Nwabinele.
Yes.
Yes. But before we do that, let's jump into the synopsis.
Here are three things you should know about my husband. Number one, he was the great love of my life, despite his penchant for going incommunicado. Number two, he was, as far as I and everyone else could tell, perfectly happy. Which is significant because, number three, on New Year's Eve, he committed suicide. And here's one thing you should know about me. One, I found him. Bonus fact, no, I am not okay.
Alrighty, so for this episode, we're going to have a rolling conversation.
Yeah. I mean, knowing us, it'll end up having some type of good, bad, or ugly.
Of course, naturally.
Or great thrown in there, but it'll just be a rolling conversation for us.
Yeah. Okay, so for our first discussion question, oh my goodness, I can't talk, y'all. Tell me, what expectations did you both have for the book before you went into it? And how do you feel about them now that you have finished a book?
My expectations for this book.
Yes.
Oh, no.
I knew this was going to be a sad one. Right? I knew from what I read briefly about this book that it was going to be that gut-wrenching book, right? We read the synopsis. We hear about suicide and we hear about death and we hear about a wife finding her husband dead, and I'm like, oh my god, this is first of all right up my alley. I mean, you know, like the social worker in me just came out, the therapist in me just came out when I read the synopsis. So I expected it to be very touching, very gut-wrenching, very sad, but and can we put like a big butt right there? Because it exceeded my expectations in the sad department, the depressing department, because this, in all honesty, might have been one of the saddest books I've read, but so profound in the way it was written and represented grief and loss and pain and hurt and family. And so, did I get what I expected going in? I did and I didn't, right? Because I knew it was going to be, you know, one of those touching stories that will probably stay with us. But I didn't expect it to be so, there's probably no good parts.
Yeah.
You know, in this book.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll discuss this later.
Right.
But that I didn't expect. You know, we have these stories where it's sad and then you get to the light at the end of the tunnel kind of situation. Mm-hmm. That's like barely there here. And
right.
So, but I think that's what made me appreciate like the story more. It's not the typical book that we read about grief and suicide and death and all that we get here.
Yeah.
Got it.
For me, same, went into it knowing, really honestly the bare minimum in terms of like, because I love reading your reviews specifically because I feel like you give a nice synopsis of the story, but then you kind of just give it all in one go of like what to expect. And for me, I was like, okay, so these, like, I was hype. Yes, I love your reviews. I don't know if I tell you that enough. I always try to say, like, sometimes I have to like rearrange my wording because I'm always just like, I love your review. Okay, so this is that. But I went into it with that like You're welcome. But yeah, so I went into it with that kind of like, okay, I know what this is about. I know that suicide is a part of it. I know the suicide of a husband. And it had been a long time since I've read anything that had anything to do with suicide. So I had an idea. I was like, okay, grief is the overall thing here. I'm a glutton for grief because, you know, unfortunately, my dad passed, I want to say, almost 7 years this June. And I tend to reach for those type of stories very quickly. So my expectation was, Kim, you're going to be sad. went into it and I was like, oh, I'm really going to be sad. Oh, this is really just going to be. And then we listened to it on audio. So Ajoa Ando, aka Lady Danbury, she narrated the story and she did a phenomenal job. Mm-hmm. And I'm when I say you felt that pain, that grief, the exhaustion, like there's so many feelings that she emoted so well that I had to pause a lot of times because I was like, oh God, okay. So like all my expectations were met, I'll say. For me.
Okay.
Yeah. But Joan did a thing.
She sure did. She sure did. Yeah. I think for me, well, not I think, going into reading the book, just based off the synopsis, when I read it, I was like, oh, this is going to be, there's going to be a lot of pain, right? But I think, I mean, because you both said it, like there, you were anticipating the pain, the grief, the processes, right? But I also was anticipating a bit of, or my expectation, I should say, was more that somehow, some way, we're going to see the light.
Yeah.
Like, things were going to shift, and she will begin, like, a really good healing process, or, like, reach the point where, like, there wasn't as much pain. But I think I left it at, like, almost elementary level. Like, there were so many layers to the pain, the grief, the process, the timelines, the family, friends. The like, there were so many layers. The mother-in-law.
Yeah.
Like, there were so many layers to it that I did not give it credit for, or, like, didn't think that it would be such a major factor in her grief process. But to a certain degree, I should have thought about this because grief affects everybody. Not just the person who's grieving. And I think my expectations were.
And then life continues met. As you're grieving.
Life continues. And then you have to figure out how to
live.
Keep up.
Yeah.
To a certain degree.
Yeah.
But yeah, her process was a bit different to that. And I think this is going to be a really good discussion because, wow, I'm already getting into it.
Okay, so starting us off, Eve often discusses the reality of grief, whether through her inner monologue or conversing with her loved ones. What are some things about grief that you wish people would share or talk about, including if you do have your own grief journey or not?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Grief is so personal, you know, and I think that's the thing that I would want people to understand, whether it's through a book or their own personal experience or, you know, just being supportive of someone who's experiencing a loss, like grief is so personal. And so we saw it in this book with Eve where everyone lost, right? Aspen lost to, Jennifer lost to, you know, the entire family lost him. He was, you know, he was a big part of that family, not only because of being Eve's husband, but, you know, but everyone is dealing with that loss differently. And so I think the thing that I would want people to understand about grief is there's no timeline to this. There's no right or wrong way on how grieving looks or how it should be done. Like, it is so, how a loss impacts you personally is just how it impacts you personally. And so you'll have the same people, two people in the same household who are grieving the loss of the same person, whether it could be siblings, it could be, you know, parents, whatever it is. And that will look differently, you know, between two people, like, or whoever is experiencing that loss. And so I'd want people to understand more that this is deeply personal. Talking about it can help and it cannot help. Like, this, none of this is linear. Like, it's just there will be good days, there will be bad days, there will be days. I think in one part of the book, and I think I wrote about this in my review, Nia, you said this just now also, where there were so many layers to Eve's loss. Like, you know, here comes the baby, we're adding in a mother-in-law, we're adding in her job. I think her job was in jeopardy at right. one point. Like, life is happening while people are processing their loss. So mm-hmm. For someone to say, and we hear this all the time, right? Like, on whether it's our personal journeys or just mm-hmm. through stories, movies or whatnot, like, you know, you should be getting over this already, or mm-hmm. you know, time heals all wounds, and time actually does not heal all wounds, in my personal opinion. Like, you just Same. Get different coping mechanisms to handle yeah. these feelings at different stages, you know. Right. And so I think talking helps when it's appropriate. Talking helps when it's appropriate. And I think that's, it's important for people to understand that grief is deep. And we not only grieve people, we grieve normal relationships. We grieve the loss of jobs. We any loss can
yeah.
be grieved,
yeah.
you know? Right. And so people sharing their personal stories, for me, fortunately, what do they say in Jamaica or wherever, like, knock on something?
Yes.
I've experienced loss, but deep mm-hmm. personal grief for me would be, you know, the loss of my uncle, my mom's oldest brother, who I was born into the same house with him. Like, we all grew up together in Jamaica, and that was my yeah. first real experience of death. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and then sudden death. And I think that's the part about this story too that adds that additional layer. To it, is all the mm-hmm. right?
This is yeah, yeah.
by suicide. So let's talk about grief looking entirely different from someone that, you know, it's expected, maybe,
yeah.
right? Where mm-hmm. had a family members or loved ones had a chance to prepare for this. Like, someone died by suicide, and there are no answers to your questions.
Right.
That's a different level of grieving there.
Right.
And so this is all very personal. This is very personal. It's not a one size fits all. You know, you and I can have the same loss in the same home, and how I deal with it, it's going to look very different from how, you know, you someone deal else it. Deals with it.
Yeah. Right.
For sure. For sure. I 1,000% agree with everything you said. I'm not going to say it again because that will cause emotions. It's too early to get emotional. but I think one thing that I'll add to that is that sometimes it's necessary for everything to kind of burn to the ground before you rebuild. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not possible for you to keep going in the lane that you were heading in. You know, once that big, you know, grief moment has like hit your timeline or your life, sometimes you have to start from zero. So sometimes it is necessary to quit your job. Sometimes it's necessary to take time off and kind of refocus, refigure out, you know, or reconfigure.
Reconfigure, yeah, yeah.
Why not reconfigure?
That's fine.
Reconfigure, you know, what your next step will be, because sometimes our lives are so, or the things that happen in our life are so surrounded around like this particular person,
mm-hmm.
you can't function.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important that we give ourselves grace, or that is talked about, giving mm-hmm. yourself grace
yes.
in order to rebuild and figure things out, because it is possible. But again, like we've been saying, timelines are different. Sometimes yeah. it'll happen in a few months. Sometimes it'll happen in 1 month. Sometimes it's years. We don't know. And no one should be, for lack of better words, judging anyone's, mm-hmm. you know, progress or journey.
Right.
Because like I said, grief affects, or like we've been saying, grief affects everyone differently. And different people rebuild differently.
Like
it's just, I think it's necessary sometimes to kind of rebuild.
Yeah. So just to, honestly, you both have said literally everything that I thought about Eve. I will say that I think, and I will say that I also kind of say this a lot. Eve brought a new layer of like seeing myself in a way reflected
in her than other books that I've read that have like discussed grief. For example, like Legendborn, you know, for me, Bree was kind of the first character that showcased grief to me that felt like my grief and not like the typical, you know, YA adventure story that comes with it. And I think with Eve, a lot of like how I felt internally, but wasn't, in my opinion, able to express externally, she felt. And I was like, yeah, this is exactly like, it's just that I didn't know how to articulate it to a certain degree. This was new. This was like a new area of life. And then it happening at a certain crux of life of like early 20s when you're now an adult. So there's expectations on you and all of the things. To Nia's point, I was never taught to let things, to let crash and burn be okay and then rebuild. I was always taught that we push through. And I had felt like with Eve, I think if I had been able to grieve in the way that I guess Eve did throughout the story, I don't know if I'd be in a better place, but it would be different. It was very much so like, why can't I do this? Like, I've lost people and it hurt, but I was able to get up and go. Like, I felt like I couldn't do that anymore. And so when Eve was kind of experiencing this, where it's just like, I know my family's annoyed with me, it was like, it was through Eve that I was like, see, this, if I could have, even through like knowing how like it would affect my family, my friends, my brother, you know, if I was able to, I think if I took the crash and burn side of grief, I would have probably been on a different angle with my grief journey. And I think that was one of the things about Eve that I felt super connected to. And her reality was a little too real. In that, you know, how she dealt with everything, how she felt, and like the lack of eating, the lack of real sleeping, and like self-medicating, and you know, all of the things. I was like, yeah, see, I feel like this is like the inner Kim. And now like Eve got to do it, and I'm like, well, okay, so crashing and burning as a Black woman, in America, I know, I know she's a Black woman in the UK, and coming from migrant families, there's this, like, that, all of those dynamics play a part in how we move. Okay, so it's okay to crash and burn. It's okay, and it's, and like Al said, it's very personal, and I think that was, for me, kind of where I was like, I want people to understand that it is very much so a personal journey. And sometimes, like you said, to your point of, it's sometimes we want to talk. Sometimes talking is great. Other times it's not really about talking. It's just about experiencing and feeling and living. And
feeling,
And so, yeah, so that's my long-winded way of saying that's how I felt about Eve.
That feeling part and that crash and burn part that we're not sometimes allowed to do is so important because that's where you feel your feelings. Think that's where healing begins. And I think from any loss or from any kind of grieving process, it's accepting that today is not a good day. It's accepting that I am sad, or naming, putting a name to that emotion. And oftentimes in certain cultures, that is not okay. It's looked on as a sign of weakness. It doesn't matter who died. It doesn't matter how they died. It's that, pull those bootstraps up, and today is another day, and we're going to keep on moving. Forget how you feel. And that sometimes can do more harm than good. And I feel like allowing yourself to feel those feelings and starting from scratch, is very important to healing and knowing, okay, what's next for me? Like, how do I move on and live my life in a way that I can function even with all these feelings and all the, you know, the loss and everything else that comes with it?
I agree, because sometimes, like, not allowing yourself to feel things, it opens up space for these feelings to be manifested in different ways. And whether it's, you know, through anger with friends or family, or, you know, like something internally, you know, maybe you're sicker than usual,
or physically,
I am
the self-medicating.
Listen, that's, and that's a major part of it.
Medicating to fill that void, or to numb, to numb yourself from feeling that stuff, you know, it's hard. And I think support is very important. I just loved Eve's support system with her friends, her found family, like those friends in the end at the art group that like became her people. And I think that was so important. They told her, they were telling her, her friends were telling her everything her family was. But I think coming from family, it's like they're expected to show say, that support in that way, right? But it's different when you now have strangers who are helping you heal, who are, you know, showing you that life does go on and it can go on in a healthy way. So there were so many layers to this book. So many layers to this,
so you know, many.
This grief.
So many. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's take a turn for a second. Let's look at someone else in the book.
Who I can't stand.
So, you know, we have, of course, Eve and Q, right? But then we also have Q's mom, Aspen. So, you know, right. The one who shall not be named. But, you know, throughout the book, we experience all that is Aspen, Eve's mother-in-law, as a villain to a certain degree, right? Despite everything that was said and done by Aspen, did you feel any empathy for Aspen losing her child?
You know, initially, no. Because Aspen wasn't behaving like she just lost a child.
Right.
You know. But then I had to pull myself back a little as we learn more about Aspen's story. So before I knew about her own husband and Q being her only child, and, you know, I think Aspen has her own story with, you know, her the passing of her husband. There was some trauma or something there too. I knew all of that, I'm like, somebody get this woman out of the book. Like, somebody get rid of her. Like, because, you know, Eve is already going through enough. And here comes Aspen, who just lost her son, you know.
Yeah.
And she wants the ring back. She wants the couch back. She wants all these material things back. That, why the is this of value to you right now? Leave somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
But then, to take myself, out of that, and I think go back to the original point that we said, with everyone grieves differently, and maybe this is how she could have coped with losing her only son after also losing her husband of many years. And so maybe grief for her looked like anger, because I think this is what was showing up with her and Eve. And of course, I think they had some history there with their relationship. They didn't like each other from the get-go, right?
Yeah.
So I think this now gives Aspen a reason, really, to just go after Eve. And grief can show up in that way, too. You know, grief can show up in the anger, the bitterness, right? Until someone has their moment to like process their feelings or come to their whatever their acceptance or their healing looks like. And I think that's what we see in Aspen. So I developed some kind of empathy for her. Was it easy? No, it wasn't. It wasn't. But that's also understanding loss from the perspective of a mother for her only child who died by suicide so unexpectedly. So I can only imagine, you know, what that meant for her, and her even trying to understand in her generation what that means and what so did she do the most with Eve? I think she did. She absolutely did the most. Like, her anger turned to pettiness at one point, I'm like, okay, this is not just you being angry about losing your son now. This is just bitterness. But I also understood from the point of a mother that she also just lost her child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would love to say that, yes, I felt empathy. I don't feel nothing for Aspen. I'm going to tell you that right now, straight up. I don't feel nothing for Aspen. I tried. And the thing is like everything that you said, I was like, you know, for a lot of it, I'm very much so in Eve's head, but yes, like, how would I feel if my son, my only child, passed away and this is how he passed away and what would that mean. But I'm not gonna lie to you, a lot of it for me with Aspen is like, Aspen off the bat just didn't like Eve, and it is clear to me and obvious to me that she didn't like Eve simply because of who she is as a person and an individual, and also because she was Black. And for me, it was like, I understand that you have, I understand that grief can make you angry. I've been through grief on the side of anger and bitterness. I was just like, you are just a terrible human being, and you just consistently are a terrible human being, and it's very hard for me. And it was, I think if she was an actual person, I'll be honest, I think I would have more empathy if she was real. I think with fictional characters, I'm able to do this thing where I'm like, nah, no, I don't feel nothing for you, okay? And I just don't. I really don't. I do feel sorry for a lot of the things that I saw that Aspen had gone through, but with the way that Eve would describe her interactions with Aspen when they were dating and then when they got married, and there's just no let up. It was just like, you successfully pushed your own child away. And even in that, he still, because I still think that they had
I don't think she pushed him away. Well,
to a certain degree.
Okay, yeah, okay, maybe, yeah, to maybe a certain not degree, because I feel like he still had a very good relationship with her,
right? And he still catered to her in a lot of ways, at the expense of evil in sometimes.
Exactly.
And it's, for me, I think it's just, that is the side of the story that I stuck onto. And I was like, nah, I just don't feel like the way that you treated Eve, I just don't feel like I can truly, honestly say I empathize with you. I don't. I want you to fall off a cliff. Yeah. But I want you to fall off a cliff because you're fictional. If you're a real person, you know, don't fall off a cliff.
I can't.
Got it. So that's my whole, like, no, I felt no empathy.
Okay.
How about you?
Okay, yeah. So I initially, of course, going into the book, I was like, oh yeah, Aspen is like a monster in law times 1,000.
A million.
Don't like her. I know she's going through this, but I'm not empathetic with anything that she's going through. And I do get your point, Kim, because she didn't make it easy. Yeah. But I will say, like LaToya, I also had a moment of everyone grieves differently. Before Q's death, Q, to a certain degree, encouraged this atmosphere. Mm-hmm. They were married for a good amount of years.
That's true.
And Q never stood up for Eve.
Yeah.
At all. And that, to me, is not going to get better in death. If anything, it's going to amplify it, because now you don't have Q here to, like, focus. Like, it's one thing if he had tried and failed, and then Aspen has to, like, kind of have that conversation, like, what happened, da-da-da-da, you know, whatever, you know, just that conversation. But the fact that he left so suddenly, and to a certain degree, Aspen has been going off of Eve taking her son, her only son, her only living, well, not only living relative, but the only living relative that she was, like, clinging on to. I feel like that amplified the anger that she felt after Q's death, and it clouded her judgment even more. And it made her respond and do things that were petty and low and dumb, because how do you want half of somebody's, or what do you, how do you want somebody's ashes when they have a wife?
Right.
Like,
right.
You're canceling out her
baby.
Like, you're canceling this mother out of the equation, this wife out of the equation, without giving room for what she's experiencing. She lost her life partner. Like, there's no coming back from that. And then she finds out that she's pregnant, and she has to do this by herself. Mm-hmm. That is overwhelming for anyone. But I do feel like by the end of the book, I did feel a lot of empathy for her, because in my head, it wasn't her fault. To me, it's Q's fault. Mm-hmm. And yes, she's old enough to know the difference, but I think he really enabled her behavior. Because he enabled her behavior, I feel like to a certain degree she believed it was real now. That, yeah, Eve did this, Eve did that, so I need to hold on to my son. I want this back, I want that back. Even things that Eve didn't even have in her possession. She's like, I'm going to sue you for this because I want this. Because I want to hurt you as much as I am hurting. to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just me. I do feel like Aspen deserved some empathy. Not a lot, but I do feel like I did empathize with her.
Yeah.
I will say this. I do blame him for not stepping up and for basically like not telling his mother when she was wrong. And then, obviously, with everything happening, how that would amplify. I do agree. It does amplify it. I think I was hoping that it wouldn't. But I also blame her because he should have stood up for Eve as his girlfriend, then wife, girlfriend, then fiance, then wife. On the flip side of that, though, Aspen was just mean from the beginning for the obvious reason of her being racist. And for me, you take more of a responsibility for that. Like, you just didn't like her. Not just because it's like, and I've been through the side of it, it's like my only son, you know, I want to be very specific about who my son marries. You were outrightly racist the entire time. And her son should have checked her, especially when she was his wife. Mm-hmm. But she also bears a responsibility, in my opinion. And I think that's why, for me, it's the baby, too. It was basically her trying to go after their unborn child. That is really, for me, when it was just like, any semblance of something that I would have felt for you, I feel nothing. And it's not going to change. And it just didn't change for me throughout the story.
Mm-hmm. And I got you.
I agree. I think if those boundaries were set up first from the get-go, since Q realized that there was going to be some tension between mom and wife or girlfriend, set those boundaries up first. But I think he was torn between the two worlds. Right? Pleasing his wife and pleasing his mom. There were so many things that Aspen didn't know, you know, about Eve or their relationship. There were so many things that Eve didn't know about his relationship with his mom or his family dynamics after, you know. And so I think both of them, unfortunately, got caught in what Q failed to do, which is be honest with his wife and set up boundaries with his mom.
His mom, you know,
about his relationship. Okay. And Aspen being a grown woman, right?
Yeah.
You should know better. But I think all of those things gave her the platform to now even blame Eve for,
Eve, before,
so now you caused my
son. What's not like you?
Exactly. Yeah,
exactly. And so
I feel like he just reinforced a lot of that behavior. Yeah. He didn't correct it. And let me just clarify, I wasn't saying that he deserves all of the blame. But I do believe he deserved like 60-40. So he deserves 60, she deserves 40. Because yes, people are to a certain degree groomed into this. They grow up being racist. But if you're given room for this behavior to continue, especially when it comes to somebody that you knew early on that you wanted to spend the rest of your life with, and you're not even, or based off of like what we read, attempting to even try to diffuse a bit or like improve the situation between your mother and your wife, I just,
there's a certain level of responsibility that has to be,
and there's a very high level, because behavior only goes where reinforcement flows. I just feel like it was necessary to have a conversation in order to you know, put it out in the open so that they can begin to actually grow a relationship. Because I just feel like there were ways around this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put myself out there a little bit, even with this speculation, which is completely a speculation. So can we only imagine the inner turmoil that Q himself now has, right? Here we have a man who died by suicide with all these layers of things, with the relationship with his mom and his wife, that this is never going to get better. Aspen is the racist woman who she is, who hates her daughter-in-law, and Eve is just trying to create this perfect home. So for him, imagine that inner turmoil for him, and I don't think he would have ever had the guts to like either be honest or set some boundaries somewhere.
So,
you know, I couldn't have seen that ending well for him either way, because he was trying to have the best of both worlds.
Yeah. Exactly. Ooh. Exactly. I feel like he was, this seems bad. It feels like I'm not poking fun at him, but like, you know, raining down on him. But I just feel like he didn't have the mental capacity to even begin to have that conversation.
Yeah.
I think he was not happy, but he was very
content.
What's the word? Not stagnant. Complacent with going in between these two places, almost like he had two different lives. Like when he was with his mom, I'm cute, or I'm Quentin, da da da. And then when he's with Eve, wife, he's with Q.
Right.
He was okay with having the two lives, and I think it caught up mentally with him, and that's probably, like you said, played a big role in what, you know, led up to his final decision.
I mean, and I like the, not to say I like that, I appreciate that we don't actually really know what was going on with Q.
Yeah.
Even up to the end, it was kind of like, it's now, we're just speculating based off of the aftermath.
Right.
Of like,
the unknown.
And sometimes I feel like, you know, like as readers, we always want the entire story, but in real life, we don't always get the entire story. And I think with Q, it's to be able to speculate that maybe this was part of the thing that was weighing on him. That could have led him to his decision.
I had an interesting conversation with another bookstagrammer about that, like knowing versus not knowing, right? And and you know, sometimes not having an answer is your answer, because that's just what you have to work with. And it's almost, so it comes down to, would you want to know? Would you not want to know? Would it have been a little less selfish? Not selfish, a little less hurtful if he had left a letter or a note. And, you know, then the conversation became, that adds another layer to the grief. Now, if you really know why, there's that constant guilt and blaming and, you know, whatever else that comes with knowing why someone dies by suicide, right? So that adds another layer to it of...
Right.
Would you rather know or not know? You know.
All right. So moving on from Aspen, let's talk about Gloria, Eve's sister, and also protector. And she's a major factor in Eve processing her grief over Q. But at one point, Gloria loses patience with Eve and feels like she's grieved essentially enough, in quotation marks, and that she's essentially holding the family hostage with her process. Do you feel like Gloria was justified in her feelings? And have you ever felt like someone was either rushing you or rushing someone that you know in their own grief process?
This happens so often, right? This happens more often than we need it to, because going back again to our first, you know, or first question, grief is so personal. It's on each person's timeline. Like, you're not, it's unfair to be rushed. It's unfair for anyone to tell you how you feel or should feel, or, you know, get over it, this now, he died 100 days already, you know? And so we even do that to ourselves, right? Like, why am I still feeling this way? I should be over this by now. Why can't I, you said this, right, Kim? Like, you need to feel like, you know, life is happening. And so yes and no, right? Yes and no for Gloria. I love Gloria, by the way, like, sis.
Same.
Right. I loved, she really had this no nonsense, like the fixer of the family kind of, you know, attitude. And I think sometimes that's needed.
Yeah.
If it's used correctly, or else I think everyone will just get caught up in the, it's a balance, right? It's a balance between allowing someone to have their time to grieve, but also not letting them go off the deep edge either.
Right.
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 Like, not letting them just sit and wallow in this process and not have a life. And so grief becomes depression. And so depression becomes, you know, something else. And I think we saw that with Eve. And so did Gloria get a little impatient with her? Yes. Did I understand? Completely. And I think that's the beauty of the way this book was written, is that it's so real. It's like real conversations that families have with each other, where, you know, it's hard for Gloria to understand what Eve might be going through, because she, you know, she lost Q as a brother-in-law, not as a husband. You know, and so their life is going to look different. Their grieving process is going to look different. And Gloria being forced into this role or placed into this role of the fixer and protector. Like, I think she's handling Eve's finances and the legal stuff with Aspen.
Yeah.
She's forced to be that, okay, let's get up and go because things need to be taken care of, you know, kind of person. And so I think her impatience with Eve came from that place, maybe.
Yeah.
I gave myself comfort in looking at it that way, where, you know, because she did also grieve Q as a sister-in-law from, you know, as a brother-in-law. And so was she justified? Yes and no. And I think that's such a safe answer.
Right.
So feel like she gave the balance, right?
Now I
understand what you're going through, but life needs, like, you need to take care of what you need to. There are certain things that's happening in your life that you just can't ignore. And I think Eve needed that. And if she didn't have Gloria as that person to be like, okay, let's figure stuff out, you know, I don't know how far Eve would have gone down this, you know, dark space.
Right. Okay. Okay. So let me just preface what I'm going to say by, my support system allowed me space. I lost both my parents, and after both of them, my support system allowed me the time and the space to grieve. Let me get off my chest. So with Gloria, we know that she is Eve's protector, her big sister. She came to her rescue for a lot of things, you know, in school, especially if Eve was being bullied. She was there. She was present. We know that she has this role in the family because they even talk about it a bit. I think it was the parents and the brother and Eve, right?
Nate, Eve.
Yeah, because that was like after Gloria. She had walked out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we know that this is her established role. I think a lot of her anger, or I'll say like impatience, not anger per se, came from a place of being that protector. Like you mentioned, like she saw how things could possibly go, how things could possibly lead. And she was trying, I think, in her own way to kind of like, hey, hold on. You got to remember, life is still happening. You now have a baby, you know, that is going to be dependent on you. There are things that are happening regardless of you, you know, being in this state. Mm-hmm. I think at that point she had lost her job too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she's like, you've lost your job. You have this great opportunity with the money, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like, we have to figure out, like, what's going to be next. And I think her method was not the best, because it came out as anger, or like she was just over Eve, when I don't think that was necessarily it. She was just trying to say, like, you know, you gotta wake up, just come back a little bit. I think, like you said, Latoya, there is a balance between, you know, yeah, I'm giving you space to grieve, but there's also the other side of it, where it's like, I don't want you to go too far off the deep end, because it's harder to pull back someone when they're off the deep end. I will say, in my personal experience, for me, that was my cousin. She gave me space to grieve. I was allowed to live in her basement for a few months, you know, after my mom, for almost 6 months, you know, live in her basement. And she was that person that gave me space, but she also like casually threw in, okay, so like, where do you want to go after this? It wasn't like a, hey, you have about 3 days before you got to go, but remember, you know, you wanted to do this, do that. And it wasn't in a sense like I'm rushing you, but it was also like, just remember, there are still things happening. I think to a certain degree, I agree. It was like a yes or no on whether it's a yes and a no on whether it was just justifiable, because I could see both sides of it. But I think it was, I'm leaning more on yes, because Eve's grieving process was a little harder and deeper, like almost bone deep for me, in comparison to, not in comparison, but like to how other people display their grief. Mm-hmm. I think everyone kind of saw that, okay, this is going really deep. And I think Gloria did what she thought she could in order to kind of pull Eve back. Because I'll be honest, mm-hmm. To me, mentally, the picture is that her support system is holding onto her by a rope and she's like dangling off a cliff. Mm-hmm. Like she's in the balance. Mm-hmm. Like if she loses her footing, she's gone.
Yeah.
And I think it was needed. Because to me, it started the spark. It wasn't quite there, but it started the spark that, okay, the way that I am grieving is now affecting everybody deeply too. Mm-hmm. Like it's not just me.
Yeah.
And I mean, yes, she went through the mental Olympics of, you know, are the people gonna leave me? Like, are they leaving me? But I think it sparked it. Mm-hmm. It sparked the thought that, okay, things are happening outside of me. I don't have to be quote unquote self. Not that I don't have to be, but I think I am looking at it a bit too selfish.
Mm-hmm. I think there was a scene between Gloria and Eve where Gloria stopped Eve from seeing her niece and nephew because of the state that she was in. And I remember that being like a wake up moment, a shocker. Like, what do you mean I can't see my niece and nephew? Like, they're my niece and nephew. And Gloria says to her, like, look at you. Look at you. Like, what are the kids seeing? How are you even going to show up for your niece and nephew, you know, in this state? And I remember, I think that being one of the moments where, just as you said, Nia, like Eve had this, oh my God, this is now affecting other people around me. I can't even see my niece and nephew. And I think she was just so much in her moment and in her grief and in her loss that she didn't realize that. And when Gloria said that to her, like, no, you can't see my kids, you know, because of how you are. That was a wake-up moment for her.
Right. And I also feel like in that moment, too, that had to be a hard decision, too. Because it's like they were talking about, you know, Eve has been a part of their lives since the very beginning. They know Auntie Eve, right? Mm-hmm. And now Auntie Eve is not coming around as much. Mm-hmm. First off, Uncle Q is gone, and now Auntie Eve is not coming around. Like, that had to be a difficult decision for Gloria to make and to follow through on too.
So I'm gonna be honest, it's absolutely hypocritical the way I'm gonna approach this, and by that I mean I'm separating Gloria and Eve. I think ultimately I think I am Gloria in a lot of ways with people in my life,
and I try to be too.
To a certain degree, I sometimes am doing it in the way that Gloria does it, which is, it seems like, or it comes off as if I am emotionally detached, when in reality, I feel everything that you're feeling emotionally, but I also am fearful of what your future is going to look like in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the only real way I'm going to get you to like wake up is to do it the way that Gloria did it. So in a lot of ways, I absolutely understood Gloria's perspective. Here's the hypocrite side. As Eve, I was like, she needs to relax.
I cannot.
She's getting me upset now. And for me, it was selfish in that it was one of my, and this very personal, it was one of my highest concerns was, how was everybody else going to feel if I was to go Eve's route and crash and burn? And the fear of that is kind of what held, like, me in of and the way that I process. And I think because I was so into Eve grieving the way that she was grieving, in that I just felt like, yes, do it, get it out, be who you are.
There was
a side of me that was like, yeah, I see what you're doing, Gloria, and honestly, I can't lie, I would be you. But in being like Eve, I wanted to punch her. I wanted to punch her, especially when she said that she couldn't see her nieces and nephews, understanding that from Gloria's perspective, Kimberly would say and do the exact same thing. It was this back and forth with me. And I felt like in this in throughout the story, I think I was very much so like on Eve's side for majority of the situations that she went through. But in this one instance with her sister, I was, and even with her brother, Nate, I was always conflicted because I could see their fears. I could see just the aggravation of like, girl, your husband has money and you're coming into this money because you're his wife. Mm-hmm. And you talking about you don't want to accept the money. Like, what's wrong with you? We don't get to live in the fatura. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have bills. You have bills, you need to, and now you're having a child. So we don't have this whole emotional of, no, I don't even want to touch it. You better touch it. You better keep touching it. Okay.
And how are you supposed to live?
Right. And it's like, it was these, like, I felt like a hypocrite. Cause on one end, I'm always like, I'm like, Gloria, be quiet. On the other end, I'm like, Eve, wake up. Like,
no, stand up.
And so there was that for me. It's where I do feel like you, LaToya, there's a yes and a no. I'm leaning more onto yes than no. But it was very conflicting for me. Like listening to it, I was literally just like, okay, but. And I'm just like, okay. I can't defend anyone because I understand both perspectives. And that's why I introduced my answer as it's going to come off hypocritical. I'm okay with that.
Right.
Because I could see both sides. And
absolutely. It's always that tug. And it's always that tug in real life. And I, as a therapist, that's always been, right? That's what sessions look like. That's what therapy looks like. It's looking like holding space for the grieving that's happening, the loss that's happening. And we want to say however long that is, it's going to take
happen. Right.
But there's still the but. Like in the meantime, we're holding space and we're, you know, we know that you have to heal and we know that this has nothing to do with time, but life goes on. But there's a life that needs to be lived. And if you're not living this life while you're healing, right? Like then this is going to get worse. It is going to get worse. And I think I think Eve's support system balanced out in the ways that it needed to, from the friends, you know, to her mother, the parents, the friends that she formed at the art, you know, the art shop.
Yeah, art group.
Everyone played that role. Yeah. And I also wondered, like, would her grief and would all of this look different if Q had not died by suicide? You know, how much of her not being able to really move on has to do with, I need to know what happened or
why.
Need to know
why.
You know, she's so stuck in that emotion because it's all you. And I think she said it multiple times throughout the book, like, how could you leave me just, you know, like this, not knowing they had this perfect life? And, you know, would that look differently if he had a terminal illness and this was something that they were prepared for and there was some, you know, and I think that's the nature of grief and loss and death, I guess.
Literally.
I think that's an important point that you pointed out because I do feel it would have looked differently.
Yeah. Because throughout the story, she was very much so like, it was always a constant loop of, did I not do enough? Like, is it that I did something within our marriage and that is what, like, so Aspen kind of adding that extra factor, it was already her own thought process. And so seeing that, like, I think it would have been completely different for her in her grieving. I don't know if it will change the way that she grieved, but I do think, it would be a speculation at all.
Yeah, speculation at all. Okay, so of course we find out that Eve is pregnant and her response was a combination of indifference and a bit of numbness. How do you think if you were in Eve's shoes, you would handle the news of becoming pregnant in this moment?
Yeah, especially initially.
This trauma moment.
Right, especially initially.
Oh my gosh, when that pregnancy was thrown in there, I'm like, huh. I think this is where I paused this book, like, okay, girlfriend needs a break, because what? We are really adding this layer?
That's a whole new layer.
And I had to, now it's not just you, it's an entire life that you now have to consider, and, you know, so it's, I think, this is where it became a what the hell kind of moment. what, and I asked myself that same question, like, what do you even do here? How do you even, because now you're forced, right? And I think this mm-hmm. this was what happened. This was a turning point for Eve, yeah. even though at one point I was confused as to, okay, Eve, please tell me that you are going to like wake up and start taking some prenatal vitamins one day or mm-hmm. like, you know, act like you're pregnant, sis, please.
Right. Right. Yeah. You
know? But I also understood that denial, because it's like, here I am trying to process my husband's, you know, untimely death by suicide, and I'm mm-hmm. now pregnant with his child, and how is she going to explain? So adding the layer of pregnancy to Eve's loss and the grief and the, you know, everything else that she has going on, and I stopped and literally asked myself, well, what do you do here?
Right.
You know, of course, life goes on. This is a human mm-hmm. being. This is a child. This is a life. And I think it's hard to say. It's very hard to say what you would do if you were in someone else's shoes, right? Because mm-hmm, in this yeah. moment, we're thinking logically, emotions are stable, and
right.
you know, I can easily read this book and sit here right now and say, well, that's a child and that's a baby. Of course I have to put the baby's life first and yeah. you know, all of that. But I'm not Eve, you know, mm-hmm. and so I don't have a monster-in-law breathing down my neck trying to ruin my life. I don't have a husband who just died by suicide, and I have no idea what, like, her whole world was just imploded on its head,
right?
And now she's pregnant, and so I can't even imagine the well, we've seen, we read the, you know, the range of emotions that she went through, and it's almost like, you know, I understood the numbness. I understood the indifference, because it's almost like, why?
Yeah, you know, right.
Why now? And how do I explain you to this child when I don't even know what's happening here myself? So I completely understood her reaction. It left me personally, I don't know, kind of like almost speechless. Like, what would I do here?
Yeah.
You know, the rational side of me knows that this is where things should change. Like, if I couldn't get up and shower for 3 weeks, or if I haven't been eating, or if I wasn't talking to anyone and I was just isolating myself, like, some of that would have to change now, because, you know, as expecting a child and considering their life and all of that. But those things are harder to do when you're grieving and going through depression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think I think that's the moment I really felt. I mean, we felt for Eve throughout this entire book, because it was just, you know,
a lot,
one trauma and another drama
after another.
But this is the part of it where I just felt like, okay, this poor woman can't catch a break.
Right, you're right.
And you know, and it's like, how do you tell someone who can't even think for themselves that they now have to not only start thinking for themselves, but think for another life?
Yeah.
You know, but I think we saw that turn with her at that moment too, right? Where, mm-hmm. you know, she started making decisions. It wasn't easy. I don't know if she might have missed or pretended to take like her prenatal vitamins or something. Like, she mm-hmm. didn't go to the doctor appointments and whatnot. And you know, but I think that's where we started seeing a turning point for her in terms right. of, you know,
her okay, grief like, and her journey. Life,
yeah. Has to now look different. But I think with the baby, I think her, you know, and I'd be interested to see what you ladies think about this, like, her inner battle with dealing with the pregnancy is now, number one, your dad is not here with me. This is something that we should be doing as husband and wife. The timing of all of this, now that you died by suicide, I don't know why you died by suicide. And how do mm-hmm. I explain that to a child? And
right.
I think those things caused a lot of the inner turmoil for her. You know, it's the what next? What will motherhood look like? What will single motherhood
look like
for her? Mm-hmm. And so I understood the numbness. I understood that shock factor of,
yeah,
you know, what a timing.
What?
And what do I do right now? Yeah.
Right. Honestly, similar to you, same thing. I think, honestly, her numbness, I was like, yeah, that'd have been me. I would love to say that it wouldn't be me, but if I was in her shoes, I think I would be as indifferent as she was initially, because I think initially it was just kind of like, okay, I'm pregnant. And like, because that's shocking. And usually, honestly, I'll tell y'all this. I have literally DNF books for this exact trope, the surprise pregnancy trope that comes up. Yeah. I have DNF books for it because I absolutely can't stand it. Mm-hmm. In this book, I didn't DNF, obviously, and I didn't even pause at that point because I did want to see what exactly her process was going to be. And if I felt like if she had gone into it like, oh, I have to change everything about me so instantly, I wouldn't have believed her character, because I think the way that she was developed up until the point of her finding out, her response was exactly what I expected. Mm-hmm. And I could understand it, because in a lot of ways, I do think that I would have responded the same way. I think I would have handled the news the same way, especially with all, I mean, it is a lot to be a parent. And I know I am not a parent. And a lot of that is because I know it's a lot to be a parent.
Right.
So if you're telling me like...
It is.
Right. So I was like, I feel like I would have been like, okay. Like it would have, I wouldn't have responded in a way that I think most people would have expected me to. And I'm glad that Eve did respond that way, because I like to watch her process through that now, because this was... Yes, I think a turning point in her grief. I do think it was a thing that might have made her pull up her bootstraps a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think Gloria really was like, get it together. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Like, I think Gloria was really that, Gloria and Nate in a lot of ways. Yeah. But I do think that her, you know, being pregnant, I think it was just like, okay, all right, mm-hmm. now here's the steps outside of me.
Right.
And so, yeah, that's mm-hmm. how I would, honestly, I probably would have handled it the same way, ultimately, is what I was saying.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What about you, Nia?
Got it. So, at this point in the book, this is where I threw my hands up in the air as I was driving. I mean, I was at a stoplight, but I was just like, this just keeps going. How are we gonna grab this, right? Her initial response, I was like, yeah, that's very much on brand for Eve. And I... Okay, so this is where Nia comes into it for real. Her, like I said, her initial response was very on brand for Eve, but I got so annoyed so quickly because I was just like, Eve.
Get it together.
It's not just you now. It's a baby. Mm-hmm. And this baby shares DNA with you. Well, shares your DNA as well as your husband's DNA. This is a second chance. This is a new life. Like, Eve, come on now. I experienced a lot of impatience when it came to Eve being pregnant and how she initially was taking care of herself. I struggled to find the empathy in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I work with kids, of course, but I struggled. But if she had responded, like Kim said, if she had responded any other way, I don't think it'd be as believable. It'd have been like what I would have wanted, but not believable.
Yeah.
But if I was in her shoes, honestly, the numbness would have been a part of it. I could have even like celebrate, but in that moment, I knew it would kind of like revved up the other side. Like, okay, not there yet, but now I have a life that I have to take care of. So I would like to think, because, you know, we could always say like what we would do, but you know, the actual emotions, the actual trauma may alter, but I would have hoped that I'd, you know, kick it into gear,
mm-hmm.
Where I'm taking care of myself in my own volition, mm-hmm. and not just like dependent on, you know, everyone else do it for me to a certain degree.
So you're saying that you would have felt the indifference, but I mean, sorry, you would have felt the numbness, but the indifference for you was just, mm-mm.
Yeah. for me, it wouldn't have been the indifference. The numbness, because it's like, how do you expect me to celebrate
right.
when, mm-hmm. you know, my significant other, my husband, is no longer here and he left so suddenly. I'm still dealing with that. And now, boom, here's another responsibility. Because now, at first, it was just her responsibility to kind of get better, to make her way through it. She had the space and time to a certain degree to make her way through it. But now having a baby, that kind of put everything to me on a clock, mm-hmm. on a timer, where it's like, now I'm going to have this little person dependent on me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just feel like in yeah. her shoes, if I was there, I would have tried to move past it a little faster. But, you know, I can only, you know, assume.
You know, I mean, I completely understand. I think a lot. Yeah.
I think I appreciate the way that was written, though, the most, mm-hmm. because it made it that much more real to me what she was going through. I mean, yes, it's fiction. Yes, it's a story. But I think it made it so much more believable. Just like you said, Kim, if she mm-hmm. had just, like, woken up pregnant and oh okay now you know life Flip goes switch. On now I have no I'm like yeah. now I'm questioning how you were right. really feeling before
right
and so I looked at that part from the perspective of a therapist and you know who have treated people with grief, long-term grief, complex grief for years and years, and knowing that people do get stuck in these stages. And so it's hard for their brains to process that. So I was able to empathize with Eve from the perspective of a therapist, a social worker, mm-hmm. someone who has, you know, treated people experiencing complex, complicated long-term grief and depression, and knowing that, you know, sometimes it's hard to really pick yourself up, even knowing right. that if you don't, it can have, you know, it can have serious consequences on your life, right? If you don't go right. to work, you probably won't have anywhere to live, you won't have money, you know, you can harm your unborn child. But I got it. I understood. Even with knowing, like, as a mom, so several hats came on, right?
Right.
Reading that part, it's almost like, okay, my mommy hat was like, what are you doing? Like, get it together. Kind of, you know, now you have a child to consider. But then I kind of understood the way she was written and the way her grief was so layered and deep and just painful. I understood why it was still hard for her to right. like, just pick herself up, even knowing about the pregnancy. And I think that's what I appreciated, you know, as I was saying before, I appreciated the way that it made it feel more realistic to me. It made Eve's character feel like, okay, she's really suffering. If it took her this long and it's this hard to really mm-hmm. still get it together, even after learning about a pregnancy, this is real. And I really yeah. appreciated that about how her character was written.
Mm-hmm. Same. Yeah. That's the most eloquent way I can say same. Yeah. I would love to say that I probably would be like Nia, where it's the numbness versus the indifference. But honestly, I think if I was Eve, I would have been the same way, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, okay, moving from there is our final question of the episode.
Ooh. Ooh.
I know, right? So we, you know, Eve decides to go to this retreat that was already planned for Q, at the Isle of Man, which I think is it's an island off the coast of Ireland, if I'm not mm-hmm. mistaken. And she decides to go without telling anyone. And it's also kind of, I think the way that I processed it was that it was a way to get away from certain levels of grief and feeling the suffocation of her loved ones to a certain degree. And then just the reality of being, of potentially being and going to become a mom without Q. How did you both feel about her decision to leave without telling anyone? And do you think she should have at least spoken to Nate, her brother, before going? And we asked that because, you know, Nate and Eve's relationship was very much so like he was there for her in a silent way, but mm-hmm. a very, it's like I say silent, but really it was also a very vocal way. And I think she was the closest to Nate. throughout this process. And so to not even tell him that she was leaving was a very specific decision. Mm-hmm. And how did that make you feel? And did you agree with her? Did you disagree with her? Are you in the middle? All the things.
I did. I agreed with her 100% with the way she did that. I think that's necessary. I think she needed that. I think she needed that moment without having anyone trying to, you know, influence that decision either way, right? Mm-hmm. Whether she goes or whether it was safe to go, whether, you know, what. For her, I fully supported her just taking that time away to process things. At that point, she needed to think without the influence of other people mm-hmm. at that point.
Mm.
I think from her family's perspective, as a family member, I would worry. Like, I wouldn't want a family member who's pregnant and going through all those things, like going off somewhere on their own. Like, what are you going to do? Like, are you really okay? Do I have to worry? Do I need to call the cops? Like, so many things can go through our minds.
Right.
But I really think throughout this entire process, even though Eve needed the support, I love how Nate was there for her. Her parents were there for her, her friends. And that was good and well. But she never had a moment to kind of really think in a healthy way or process things in a healthy way.
Right.
Without the influence of everyone else. And I think that was needed. I looked at, in my mind, that was kind of the escape that she needed to put her life together in a way that makes sense for her.
Right.
But mm-hmm. again, in a healthy way, like I think up at that point, she now knows that life goes on and there are some decisions that she needs to make and there are things that she can no longer ignore. And I think this trip or this getaway was kind of figuring out what will that look like. I don't think it was, she was still in that moment of deep crisis where we mm-hmm. have to worry about even her well-being. Yes, to an extent, but not to the point where is she going to hurt herself? Is she going to be safe? Is she, you know, all those lingering questions or concerns that comes with someone who's just been so isolated for so long. I don't think she was still at that point when she took that trip. I feel like she needed that moment of solitude to make some better decisions for herself. Would I have done that? Probably not. Mostly because I'm a scaredy cat, but you know, should she have at least spoken to Nate or her family members? I think they would have tried to talk her out of it. You know, and she wouldn't have gotten that space. I think just being away from, you know, her immediate home, her immediate family, that change of scenery, going somewhere that was beautiful, even going somewhere that was somewhat connected to Q, was mm-hmm. maybe therapeutic for her in that way. I think I made sense of it in my mind in that way.
Got it.
That it could have been a healthy thing for her.
Got it. I hear you. Mm-hmm. I think it's necessary sometimes to step away from a situation in order to kind of figure things out, because mm-hmm. when there's a lot of people kind of smothering you, mm-hmm. it can be a lot to kind of like see things clearly. So kind of work through the mud or the muck mm-hmm. and kind of like figure out like, okay, what's going to be happening next? Figure out what am I actually feeling, you know, with whatever situation, whatever trauma happened. I think it's definitely healthy and necessary for everyone's process. Mm-hmm. But I also do not agree with Eve going off by herself without telling anyone. Luckily, you know, Gloria knows her password and she was able to figure out like where she is. But I don't agree, because now there's like another layer, because now family is worried about you. And then God forbid if anything happened, what is your family supposed to do? Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't feel that you could come to someone. You don't even have to go to everyone. And you know what? I don't even think Nate would have stopped her. It's just like, I think it would just, to me, have been better and healthier if she told at least one person where she was going, just to be on the safe side. And that's the only side I'm really looking at it, just to be on the safe side. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, I do agree that it's necessary to get through, you know, trauma, to have space and time for yourself that you can work out your thoughts and not have, like, everyone else kind of giving their two cents or their opinions on things that they're not going through right now, because no one will ever feel what anyone has felt. I could lose a significant other tomorrow and I still wouldn't feel how Kim feels if she lost her significant other last year. Like, mm-hmm. I won't feel that. Like we've been talking about, you know, everyone feels things differently. But I just feel like, that wasn't the healthiest choice in that moment. But I think I'm also looking at it as from the side of her family mostly than Eve.
So it's again, I mean, basically what Nia said is exactly how I felt. It's again, I'm approaching this as a hypocrite because on one side, I am an advocate for solitude in that I do feel like there are certain moments where I feel like it's okay to want to get away. And I think selfishly, that's just how, like, I feel like I would have wanted to get away. I would have wanted to not have to deal with, because it's not even just people's feelings or emotions. It's just them being there, yeah, to a certain degree. Sometimes it's just you being here and existing,
crowding,
that's just causing too much for me, and I just, yeah, want to exist without all of you. Mm-hmm. However, on the flip side of it, this is where I think I was like, at least say something to Nate, because I do agree with Nia, where it's like, I feel like Nate wouldn't have stopped her. Where I think it would have hindered her is that I think Nate would have probably told Gloria, and then Gloria would have stopped her, and then the, yeah, mother would get involved. And so I do see how the trickle domino effect of that,
you're right,
being like a thing. Yeah. But to be honest, as a person who I don't like when I don't like that. I don't like not knowing, like, or how do I say this? I don't like if Nia was to just disappear and she decided not to tell the world. Cool, I don't care about the world, but if she decided not to tell me, and this is not just my best friend, but we are also roommates, we live together, there's an extra level of anger that I'm going to feel for Nia if she just disappears and I don't even get a, like, even if it's like, she disappeared, she didn't even tell me, like, she's leaving the state, you know, things like that. I was just like, I would be pissed off, and knowing that, I couldn't ever say, like, I would be, like, on Team Eve completely on that side of it.
Right.
And I think, like you said, Nia, there was a safety side to it. But also, like you said, LaToya, she needed this solitude. She just, yeah, needed this moment away. I would have at least, mm-hmm, told Nate, but I would have told Nate, like, when I was getting on the airplane.
No, I would have told him when I landed.
Or even that. Like, I would, yeah, you're right. You're right. Like, when she landed, she should have just been like, listen, I'm away.
I'll be back.
Right.
I'm not far from England, but I don't want you to know where. Right.
Think I would have. I would have told someone who could have remained completely unbiased about my situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have told, you know, if a therapist was an option, or, you know, I don't know, an employer that you have a good relationship with, like someone who, number one, yes, for safety reasons, I'm going off to wherever on my own for whatever reason. I wouldn't want to tell someone who would try to talk me out of it or possibly show up where I am. Because
right,
that's not what she needed, or that's not what I would have needed in that moment. And I think sometimes when we're trying to do what's best for us, it's going to piss the people off in our, it's,
yeah,
going to piss people off who are in our lives.
Right,
and,
yeah,
so I hear you, Kim. I hear you 100% looking at that from the perspective of a friend or a family member who you're genuinely concerned, because, you know, your friend is going through things or your family member is going through things, and now they just up and left, and who knows what's happening to them, you know?
Yeah.
And so looking at that from Eve's perspective, it's what she needed, and sometimes what you need for yourself is not what other people are going to agree with. in the way that it's done, in the way that you go about doing it. And so that's why if I were in Eve's position, I would try to find someone who can be completely unbiased, or as unbiased as they can be.
Right.
About my situation, who's not going to try to talk me out of something or try to give me a pros and cons list, but try support me in my decision to get some time away, but you still know where I am if there's an emergency.
So you get safety side, right?
Yeah.
See, but this is what made this book so great, because it was it was just so much.
Right. And honestly, I mean, you know, we said this was our last question. There's so much more that happened afterwards, after the Isle of Man, that we could go into. But honestly, I think at this point, if you have already read the book, amen, welcome.
Yeah.
If you have not already read the book, I think now you should.
Go get it.
You know, but this was really a great conversation, because I think we touched so many different aspects of not just grief, but life in general.
Yeah.
And existing. In many ways. Yeah. Normally we do this thing of like we share a rating. I don't know about y'all, but I don't have a rating for this book. Also, we all don't have ratings. Team no rating.
I feel like it's not gonna do it justice.
I think it's just it's a book that is like, I hate saying that, because ever since The Months of Reckoning, I don't like to say a necessary read. But I do think it's one of those books that I definitely highly would recommend on any list. Absolutely. I'd put on.
There's so much to take away from this, even being a, you know, a fiction story. It's so deeply personal and real. And I think that's why I couldn't give it a rating either, because this could have been anyone.
Right.
This could have been anyone's life. It felt so 100% true.
Right.
In the way it was written, you know, in how we learned about the characters. Like, it felt so real.
Right.
Yeah.
With that being said, I think we all had different levels of a moral of the story / takeaways. I think we all have discussed our various takeaways. So I won't even force us to be like, okay, so what's your takeaway? Because then sometimes we like we'll be like, we'll wait till we do the show and then it'll come through. There's too many things in my mind of what I would say is a moral of the story. Honestly, I would just say in a really encouraging way, I think all of us recommend you pick up this book and experience a lot of the feelings.
Whether you've been through grief or not, I think it's a really good book.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To see like the different phases. Not even phases.
Right.
Like how grief comes in waves, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think it's so necessary.
Mm-hmm. Understand from someone's another perspective what that, you know, can look like. Because I think we really got to sit in Eve's shoes a lot.
And
for her in this book. So absolutely, this is 100% the book to pick up, you know, to kind of put yourself in another person's shoe.
Definitely.
And I think, I know you said no, you know, we talked about so much, but I feel like I need to say this. Like, not having an answer is also an answer.
Yeah.
And we have to make peace with that. We have to make peace with knowing that sometimes we don't have an answer and we just have to move on with life.
Yeah.
Right. We love it. I was snapping my fingers. thank you so much, LaToya, for being on the show.
Thank you.
You are now a newly inducted forever co-host.
Yes.
I'm over here snapping my fingers. It was absolutely my pleasure. I enjoyed this discussion. I enjoyed your company, the vibe, the energy. It was just so wholesome and real. And I can't wait to come back. I really genuinely can't wait.
Yay! Oh, I love that. We love to hear that. We can't wait to have you back again. Like I said, as Kim said, the discussion was really great.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you, ladies.
No problem. Thank you for tuning in.
And we will catch you guys next time.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, check out our website, buddyreadpod.com. That is BuddyReadPod.com. And follow us on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook at Buddy Read Podcast, and on Twitter at Buddy Read Pod for all of our latest updates and live reactions.